Thank you, Campbell. Thank you all so much for letting me be able to worship God with you all and be able to present a little bit of God's word with you today. Before we get into our lesson, I want to make a quick announcement. In 2 weeks from today, as we're almost in the full swing of back to school season, in 2 weeks from today after morning services on August the 2nd, I'm inviting the youth group families, those who have seventh graders or older, as well as anyone who's wanted to help out with the youth group volunteer-wise. We're going to have a luncheon. We're going to have a meeting over the upcoming year, so please be there. You would be my honored guests. I'll save a seat for you, so hopefully you can join us. So today we're going to pivot from the youth group to a different demographic. On the other side, this is something I've been informed about, but I guess Maryville's a very prime location for those who have retired senior citizens to come and migrate to. It's beautiful. It's got comforts around us. It's got landscapes beyond belief. So why wouldn't you want to retire here? So consider this the PSA to those in this demographic. We're going to be talking about avoiding scams and hackers. No matter what email you got this weekend from the church, I wrote this lesson by Thursday. So everything that happened afterward is incidental. I wanted to discuss real quick a few things to be aware of, because scamming's blown up, right? You have to watch out. AI's taking over. It's changing the landscape. So here's a few helpful steps along the way. Just the PSA. I'm just here doing my civic duty. First off, someone calls saying, "Grandma, I need help. I need bail money. I need you fill in the blank." Don't say their name. Don't say their name. Ask questions. Ask verifying questions. What's your name? Who are your parents? You know, they may have got all that information on the web, so maybe be like, where did you get the best, the best ice cream whenever I took you out to ice cream? Stuff that only you and they would know. That's helpful. Also, be aware of this. Real businesses will, like, they'll pressure you to buy their stuff, right? But, like, government and even businesses with your information, they're not going to, like, pressure you to a certain point that you can't go talk to a loved one. So always know, if you have a question, if you've got something doesn't feel right, hang up the phone, call your folks, call your kids, call someone. It's helpful. This is another deal, is verify. And here's another one. If you get a pop-up on your laptop and it asks for you to call somebody there, don't be an idiot. Close it right there. That's a clear... Just don't call those numbers. You have to really be you have to be special to be calling that one. Here's the deal, is here are the people who are practiced, who are targeted the most. You'll understand why we're taking this so seriously. Is the elderly are targeted. People like the vulnerable are targeted. The lonely are targeted. This is so important because there's another demographic that's really targeted, and it's the youth ministers. The year was 2017. Fairly new to a new location, still trying to make friends. Crystal and I hadn't met. I want to say I was 23, 24 years old, somewhere in that ballpark. Trying to have some buddies over for queso. I was making a good queso. And non-gambling Texas Hold'em. Very clean fun. Having a good time. I couldn't afford a JBL speaker, so I just had my laptop open to be able to play some background music, as one does. Up comes said pop-up. Says, "You've been taken over. I don't know who's infiltrated, but they're there. You have to act now. Call this number." And you know that, like, scamming is, like, typically a sin of, like, omission. Like, someone has infiltrated. You're like, "Man, I should have closed that door, but they came in. I can't believe this happened to me." Then sometimes you, like, invite your thief in. You, like, let them in. You thank them for their time. You give them the money outright. I think that that's kind of essentially what I did. Made the call, gave them my money, thanked them for taking advantage of me right then and there. Thieves, be wary. I wish I could say that was the only time that happened, but there may be one other story. I know that what you're thinking is, we're trusting this guy with my kids? That's a good question. I would be asking myself that as well. But oftentimes, I bring up this because it's becoming a pretty prominent form of someone feeling vulnerable, feeling exposed, second-guessing their surroundings, the people they're talking to on the phone. And I bring this up, sometimes it comes in unexpected ways, because I hope my retirement and senior community will give me a bit of forgiveness, because there's a preconception about that. And actually, if you look at statistics, it's the youngins who are getting more targeted and falling for it online way more than any other community. 18 to 23-year-olds was the most susceptible to online hackers. So I thought that that was really interesting. It comes in unexpected ways. Thieves, being robbed, being taken advantage of. And again, sometimes, though, we just kind of allow it to happen, obviously, but sometimes we welcome it. We open the door. We invite them into our lives. And today we're talking about a specific thief that I think you're aware of, that I think you're aware exists, but we don't realize how much we just open up the red carpet for them to exist in our abode. And it's my choice of allowing jealousy into my life. You've probably heard the phrase envy, jealousy. You could probably choose either term, but envy is the thief of joy, right? It's this thief that exists in my life that just robs me of what I feel about myself and discontentment for me. And that's true. Like, that's kind of why we're using the phrase the thief, is because it really is. Like, it's a thief of my personal joy. But I think oftentimes we kind of put it aside as like, it's almost like smoking cigarettes or perhaps letting your kid play with iPads. We know it's like not recommended, but it's also like, who's it fully hurting, we tell ourselves, and like, what's it really doing? At the end of the day, it's just like one of those negative things that probably you shouldn't do, but we're all part of it, right? We're all human. To err is human, to be robbed is human, so might as well just allow this one thief in. And that's kind of the frame I wanted to have whenever Travis asked me to discuss this lesson. I had worked on this last year into early this year. It was just a personal study. I was going through God's word and noticing a couple fingerprints throughout about, you know, jealousy, envy, and kind of seeing how it works out. And my question for today is it simply jealousy, envy, covetousness? Is it a thief of joy, or is it a thief of far more than that? Which isn't to downplay joy in our lives, the joy that comes from Christ, but is this just affecting me, or is it affecting something far greater? And that's what I want to do today. Today we're going to be reading four scriptures. Let's go over to Genesis chapter 4, a passage we're probably pretty familiar with. And I think it's a great foundational text on jealousy, on envy, and on covetousness. But I want us just to simply ask this question. Is jealousy, envy, covetousness, is it simply just affecting me? And ultimately, what does it do? What does it do for me and my God, me and with my fellow man, and me with myself? Those are three very important questions, and I hope by reading these four texts, we gain an understanding of what I'm arguing is the severity of the situation. So in Genesis chapter 4, we're going to start in verse 3. You know this story very well, I'm sure. Cain and Abel, the first murder that took place. And it was between a brother who did not get the recognition he felt he deserved, and he was envious of the approval and the blessing of his God to his other brother. So let's read about it. Genesis chapter 4, verses 3. In the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground. And Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering. Verse 5. But for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. So Cain was very angry, and his face fell. We'll talk about this in a moment, but it essentially means to be discouraged, hardened, disappointed. Verse 6, the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry, and why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is contrary to you, but you must rule over it." You must overcome this feeling in this moment. I want to take a few observations. The first one is this, is that why was this an issue? Why was, you know, Abel's offering approved while Cain wasn't? Was it about, you know, the ongoing idea of the lamb or the livestock being a better blessing or better sacrifice? I don't know. There might be something to that. But if nothing else, the text tells us that Cain chose from his produce. He chose some. But Abel chose the first. He chose the best. He went out of his way very proactively to allow this to be a reflection of his view of his God and his appreciation and gratitude for his God. And Cain, we don't know if he gave the worst, but he clearly didn't put much thought into it. And again, that's not really what we're talking about here. Sometimes jealousy isn't just simply being like, I haven't put in enough effort, and I see other people who have, who are praised, and therefore I'm jealous. Sometimes it is just circumstances, man, beyond anyone's control. It just is that some are favored and some, in their eyes, are less favored. But secondly, it says that his face fell. Again, it's like a hardening discouragement, disappointment. And it's this emotional thing that happens that didn't allow him to push himself forward, if nothing else. He didn't just like work on himself in this moment. He didn't just like, I don't know, like be like, well, I'm going to be better next time. If nothing else, even that sibling rivalry, less than ideal circumstance didn't happen where he's like, well, I'm going to do better next. No, he's so discouraged. He couldn't even face himself. And all he could do was look with envy at his brother. And the third thing is something that's become pretty prolific, is in verse 9, where after he slaughters his brother, God asks him, where is Abel? And he asks the infamous question, am I my brother's keeper? Am I responsible for my brother's well-being? So whatever it is, this envy, this non-important except like something that like just affects me, no, it doesn't. It's clearly not that much, because what it is it discouraged him to the point that he couldn't see himself or work on himself. And what he did and what he chose to do is to then separate his responsibility from his brother. John, 1 John chapter 3, kind of uses the story in a different way. For this is the message that you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another, John tells us. We should not be like Cain, who was of the evil one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his deeds were evil and his brother's were righteous. John might be telling us more about this, that's fine. But regardless, what we see here is that the foundation of if nothing else, washing my hands of my responsibility to my fellow man, to my brothers and sisters, starts with seeing what they have and wishing it for myself. Death and human disunity began when one wanted what another had, and emotionally and within their own obligation to them, created a barrier of separation through it. Like, I'm not responsible for you anymore. I don't owe you anything. I wash my hands of my obligation to you. And it breaks the main call that you and I have been called to do, which is to love God and to love each other. He says it started with this simple decision where we did not get the approval we wanted and we wanted what someone else had. And it's a scary thing to think of it in those terms, because I too have seen what someone else had. Maybe I've dressed it up in different ways, right? Like I started off with just being insecure about who I am and what I can do, and I start to see what someone else has, what someone else can do, what someone else looks like, where someone else comes from. I find discontentment in myself, which leads to ultimately wanting what they have and creating some emotional barrier between me and them that doesn't allow me to see them through the lens that God has called for me to see. Let's go over to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 27. Proverbs 27 verse 4 is a book of wisdom. It's not exactly law, but it is very helpful and tells us about ourselves, tells us about what God wishes for us and his divine wisdom. And Solomon, or whoever wrote this proverb, writes this in Proverbs chapter 27 verse 4. He says, "Wrath is cruel, anger is overwhelming, but who can stand before jealousy?" I thought that was really interesting, because again, so this was a quotation I found. Let me find my notes here. Excuse me. Here's what it says. Wrath is typically thought of as a result of anger, but both usually end at some point. And again, I don't think that the person writing this proverb is saying like, hey, be angry and have wrath. No, like we understand a lot of evil has happened from these two explosive emotions. I mean, if nothing else, it's caused murder. But there is something about an act of rage in our active manner that sort of be satisfied. Like you can kind of, again, not advocating for this, but you can sort of punch a wall and then like it sort of gets some adrenaline out, if nothing else. Again, not advocating, just simply pointing out as the Proverbs is. But there's something that is, you can't tame about jealousy. And that's what's being painted here. Jealousy is like this evil seeping disease that trickles in and latches on and continues to manifest. Jealousy is a beast that is never tamed or fully fed when we leave it untreated. If it continues to be there, it harbors and it never goes away.
it continues to spread and to continue to see the worst in others to justify my own insecurity, my own failure, my own discontentment in my circumstances, in my life, in my wealth, in my relationships, in my abilities. Instead of looking to them and giving them the most that they have, like, it just simply continues to paint others in a specific lens. Let's go over to the New Testament, where, again, these are pretty harsh texts, but I would venture to say that in my own studies, this was the most convicting and offensive that stood on my toes. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. If you know much about the Corinthian letter, it's Paul writing a group of individuals who seem to have a lot of internal conflict, a lot of pains going on. They're choosing their favorite leaders of the group and creating allegiances and divisions within the group. They're suing each other. They're not eating together. They're creating a lot of really terrible circumstances within it. And this is what he says about them, about their spiritual state. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 1. But I, brothers, could not address you as spiritual people, but as people of the flesh, as infants in Christ. I fed you with milk, not solid food, for you were not ready for it. And even now you are not yet ready. So let me just put it this way. I've been able to identify moments in my life where I've been ungrateful for where I am, the opportunities for me, and perhaps where God has placed me. And I've seen others in different circumstances that I alone, whether it's true or not, I don't know, I perceive as better than I. And I've been envious. I've been jealous. I've wanted it for myself. And if I've ever had a semblance of maturity in those moments, I've been able to step away for just a moment, have an out-of-body experience, and say, I've never felt more like a child than this moment. And there's something about jealousy when left untampered, like the proverb says, where it sits there and manifests, that creates this maturity, like, halt, where you sit there unthankful for others' opportunities, ungrateful for how God, who's blessed you, has blessed them. Unthankful for what God has done for you. Enviousness and jealousy are traits of human immaturity and spiritual hollowness. Like, Paul says, like, I can't have a civil conversation with you because you are children, acting like children, because you are so, let's read verse 3, held back by jealousy. Verse 3 says, for you are still of the flesh, and while there is jealousy and strife among you, are you not of the flesh and behaving only in a hollow way, or in a human way, excuse me. Here's the thing is, if nothing else, well, it should wake us up, and maybe you can take a little bit of personal inventory like I've had to at different times in my life, is to say, whenever I have sat there being jealous of someone else, not thankful for their opportunities, and wishing for circumstances that God did not give me, he's like, man, what it does for you, if nothing else, is it just keeps you as a spiritual and mature child, because you cannot continue to develop as a human being, as a well-rounded man who proclaims to love Jesus, as a well-rounded woman who proclaims to love his creation and look at someone else and wish it for yourself. He's like, we can't even have a conversation because you are sitting there wallowing in something that doesn't belong to you. I found that, again, if nothing else, for me, it was the most offensive because it demonstrates how immature I can be when I wish for something I don't have. Let's end with the last one, James chapter 3, probably the most popular passage. James chapter 3, verses 13 through 16. This is one that comes up quite a bit whenever you look up passages about jealousy, but it stands out to me for a few different reasons. James chapter 3, James is writing to teachers, to spiritual leaders, who can sometimes, he's like, be careful because you can use your teaching and your opportunity for yourself and to like just kind of like get personal recognition. And he's like, you really have to be careful if that's where you're drawn toward. Instead, he says, be wise, teach with wisdom that comes from above. He's going to show us a little bit what that looks like. James chapter 3, verse 13 says, who is wise and understanding among you? Who is that? Who is someone who is mature, who is spiritually enlightened to what God ultimately wants for them in their life and his creation? Who is wise among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in meekness of wisdom. And maybe I'm projecting a bit into this, but it's kind of the idea of like, it is someone who's saying simply, I'm a wise person and I'm going to do good things that my God has asked for me and use my strengths and my opportunities. And I'm not going to do it in a way that puts flattery on me. But it's also like meekness is like strength covered. It's kind of like the, I don't know, it's the guy who works out quite a bit, who's really buff, who could show it off, but wears a baggy shirt and you don't realize he's really ripped underneath that. Like, it's someone who's very cautious about putting a spotlight on himself, but still really could. He's like, you're a wise person whenever you do the goodness of God with humility for him to see and for others to be blessed by. On the opposite end, verse 14. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above. This is earthly, it is unspiritual, and it is frankly demonic. Verse 16. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every evil practice. So where the individual who's wise in God's terms could flex with their, you know, reputation and their actions, they do so humbly, just presenting God. The other person does every practice, every work to be seen, and they use all good things for their own gain. And he says it's a sickness that can't get off. Jealousy is one of the singular damages to humanity's joys, but it's also to their productivity, their internal peace. And here's what it results in. It only brings and reaps corruption in our life. This is what we have to allow to sit in, to realize what my jealousy that I can quickly justify and, I don't know, dress up in different ways. This isn't hurting anyone but me, but even then we're getting through it. Envy and jealousy and covetousness for what someone else has and what someone else has done is something that only brings corruption for yourself, for your development, for your relationship with others, and if nothing else, for your God. So how do we get rid of the thief? How do we put up security walls? We're going to talk about that a little bit more next week. But for now, I want us to leave with a couple helpful tips. Hopefully it's helpful for you. So here's the first thing you can do is, if nothing else, a good dose of self-analyzing helps out. Check yourself first. Check myself whenever I feel this way against someone else. Galatians chapter 6, verses 1 through 2, I'm taking this out of its context, but I think it still stands. He's like, if there is a matter to address with another brother, go to them in a spirit of gentleness. We obviously have to call out evil practices within our body. That's not something he's saying not to do. If you see corruption, call it out. But he does say check yourself first. I think in this case, he's saying, like, you know, check pride so you don't keep practicing the same things. But this is helpful for me, if nothing else, to just check inventory. Whenever I, in my mind, have an issue with somebody else and have started painting a picture of who they are and what they do and why they're doing things for attention, maybe it's a good time for me to just take a reflective moment and say, am I feeling this way because it's true and honest? And if it is, I should act upon it and I should go to them in gentleness. Or am I doing so because I want something for myself and I don't like that they have all that they have? It's worth asking yourself. Take inventory. It's a very healthy practice. Secondly, another healthy practice, root for others. Choose to root for others. I have in my notes, even root for your enemies. And again, I understand if there are sinful practices, we have to call them out. And I wish to discuss this a little bit more next week. But this is a good rule of thumb. In the book of Corinthians, there is a lot of internal fight and a lot of evil that is being practiced. And yet in chapter 13, verses 4 through 5, he says this, love is patient, love is kind, love is not jealous, right? It does not brag, it is not arrogant, it does not act disgracefully, it does not seek its own benefit, it is not provoked, it does not act disgracefully, and it does not keep an account of wrong suffered. And again, so clearly evil has been done against others in this congregation. And he says, love is not jealous of others. And love does not keep counting evil done against you. So if nothing else, it's probably a good practice to root and pray and thank God for others in your life, even those who have hurt you, and hope their blessings be upon them. Think it's good for your internal peace and your internal gratification in God. And the last one is this, and I really appreciate the songs we sang today, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. It's one of my favorites. And I love what it does because it really circles in what this lesson is ultimately about. If you still have James open, turn over to chapter 4. Brother Campbell read this for us. But in James chapter 4, in this big discussion on jealousy and acting out for selfish gain so that people would notice me, so that I could get a little bit of recognition in this world, he almost closes out this lecture with this simple phrase. Verse 10, humble yourselves before the Lord and he will exalt you. Sort of the idea of when you choose to survey the cross, what right do you have to wish what someone else has? Bow before your God. Jealousy has always been a matter of worship and a matter of gratitude. What do I choose to look on and fixate and prioritize in my mind every day? And if nothing else, am I thankful for where God has placed me, the opportunities afforded me, the family and those within my life? Or have I just looked to me? Jealousy is evil, vile, corruptible, and very easy practice. It's so easy, man. It's as easy as a pop-up on your computer and you decide to call them and invite them into your house. It makes you look a fool, and yet we still keep making that decision. Understand this, that through the grace and forgiveness and patience of God with you and your own internal contentment in him and what he's given you. Understand that what God wants for you is for joy and peace and contentment in him as he is alone. But he also wants you to think of the best for others, to wish the best for each one in this room and each person in your life. He wants you to see him and to look at him. For Cain, there's like this moment of God calls him out and he's like, man, you're knocking on the door of sin. You're raging against the machine in this moment. Like, you really are angry, and I just need you to breathe, to pause, and to look at me. I ain't going to stand here saying I have perfected jealousy or envying. But one thing that is healthy is that just like Cain could have done and what he had the opportunity to do, it is always best in those moments to pause and to look into the eyes of your God and to see what he has done for you, where he has placed you, if nothing else. How much he loves and cares for you. God cares for you. He loves you. And I thank you that I got to be here today. Perhaps this is an issue for you. And I do ask you to talk to someone who you confide in, who you love, who can help work through this with you. But if that's not exactly an opportunity for you, our elders would love to pray with you. They meet over in the library. They love to be there to listen to you, to care for you, and to pray with you. And maybe, if nothing else, you struggle with this because you have never decided to follow Jesus for yourself. You've always been the dictator of your path and of your destiny. And honestly, whenever you're number one, it's easy to wish something that you don't have. So maybe it starts with surrendering to God. If you'd like to know what that looks like, how you can follow Jesus as King of your life today, we ask that you come forward together as we stand, together as we sing.